Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. Long time no talk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen you for days.
Days upon days.
Yeah.
Well, we're both back in our little offices, yeah. Our little caves.
It's like we never left.
We've been allowed our little bit of socializing time. We were allowed out.
We were let out, yeah.
We were put back.
Catch and release.
In the cages.
Mm-hmm.
Quite weak, huh?
Not much going on.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I'm tired. I don't know about you. I'm a little tired. Turns out, driving a long way also, and not sleeping in my own bed for a few days, and also just all the stimulation and like work and people and talking and noise and whew, there's a lot going on. Big week.
It really does add up. I mean, I flew back and forth. I was telling this story to a friend last night as I was out at a friend's birthday party. I was saying, you know, when I was a kid and we'd go on these long car trips to Rochester, which is where my mom's family lives. It's like a 5 or 6 hour drive.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we get home from those, I would always, as a kid, be like, oh my God, I've been in a car all day. I want to run around.
Yeah.
And my dad would always be like, I need to go lie down. And I never understood as a kid because I was always like, nothing has happened. You've done nothing. You've just been in a car all day. You've been sitting for 6 hours, right? But like, I get home from like a 6 hour flight and I am just face plant into bed at that point. And it's like, I mean, I didn't do anything, but it is taxing all the same, right? Like, even if you're not, you know, physically exerting yourself that much, you're just sitting in a chair, like, it gets cramped, you know, you get tired, even just being confined in something, I think, makes you tired rather than making you want to run around a bunch.
Well, and this is an old man talking about being tired podcast, but there's something that I came to very late. I should have learned this sooner, but I think culturally, in general, we tend to credit physical activity as effort, and you should be tired after it, and that's true, but we tend to discredit mental activity as hard work. And the fact is, if you are like thinking really hard for a long period of time and super focused, like when you're driving, like if you're solving math problems, like if you're doing, you know, a live podcast for 2 hours, your brain is burning energy at a higher rate. You actually get tired, and it's not just mental fatigue. It's like physical. And I finally came to accept that and realize, like, no, it's not like I'm being lazy. Like, if I really mentally exert myself afterward, I'm legitimately tired. That's just how it is. It's not the same as if I go for a run, but it's still exhaustion. So it's funny that I think it says something more broadly about, I don't know whether that's American culture or Western culture or just humanity, but I do think, to all of our listeners out there, you too should give yourself credit for mental work, and don't let people consider that a freebie, because it's really not. It's absolutely not a freebie.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly, and I mean, mental fatigue is a reasonable part of it as well.
Yeah,
you know, there's a reason we've talked about writing in the past, and there's a lot. You'll find a lot of writers who talk about how much they write in a day, and a lot of them will be like, you know, I write like 1,000 or 1,500 words, and it's like, to some people that seems like a lot. To others, it's like, that doesn't seem like that, right? Because it's a couple pages, or you know, it's a few pages,
yeah,
right? And like, it doesn't seem like that much, but that is taxing. It is taxing. It is a lot of work, and it is draining.
And I'll tell you, it's different levels, right? Because if I'm writing a Macworld column about a subject I know pretty well, sitting in my backyard, I may go through a couple of hours where I'm walking around doing other things, trying to avoid writing it because I don't have it kind of cracked. But when I sit down to write it, I got to say, more often than not, it pours out. Don't tell my editors at Macworld. It pours out really fast. Like, in an hour, I will have 1,200 words, right?
Yeah.
If maybe even less, but let's say an hour, because I don't want to say even less than that. They're not going to even pay me anymore. But the point
just to be
is
clear.
Like,
I want them to know it takes me six hours to finally craft.
Well, but there's a lot.
800 words.
And again, that's the act of writing, and there's a lot of percolation that goes on, whether you're writing fiction or not. But I'll tell you, and you can back me up here, because you've done this more and more recently than me, but in my time writing novel manuscripts, that is like every sentence can be fraught, because you're not just saying, like, here are the things that I think about the HomePod, right? Which is like, it's pretty well structured. You have to come up with some milestones about, like, I'm going to talk about this, and then I'm going to talk about that. What's the concept of the article? But like, when you're writing a novel, it's like, you have to be like, what happens next? What had already happened? Where do I need to go? What, who is this character? What are they doing? Why are they doing it? How do I emulate like a whole world in my
who
head?
Who am I? Why am I here?
Why am I here? It is. Yeah, and so I remember writing, like, for NaNoWriMo, writing, you know, trying to get my 1,666 words a day. And like, I'd have paragraphs where I'd write a sentence and think, like, in 5 minutes, and think victory, because that was the right sentence, right? And that's terrible, but at the same time, that's the idea. It's like, sometimes it is like getting blood out of a stone, and that's still work, right? You got to call that work. You can't call that you could have typed anything there, because that's the point. Is, not typing sentences is easy, typing the right sentences can be really hard.
Right, and that's why I really enjoy doing other stuff. You know, sometimes, especially when I'm procrastinating, like you said, about writing something, because I know that's hard. Like, I'll sit down and edit a podcast, because it's a totally different part of your brain.
Totally different.
Right?
Yep.
And it's like, you know, it still requires some work and some thought, but it's almost much more like gut muscle reaction thing. And I've noticed this in the past when dealing with other stuff, like video editing is similar too. And for me, to an extent, even programming, which is still work and requires a lot of it. But it, again, I feel like it uses a totally different part of my brain, and I can just zone out and sit. I mean, I could sit and program or edit like video, and look up, and it'll be like, oh my God, it's like 6 hours later. Like, on those days when it's like, I really feel like I have an idea of what I'm doing. Yeah. Like, there's programming, and there's parts of those tasks where you have to stop and think and like work stuff out. But a lot of it is like, you can just kind of zone.
I've had that where I've been building websites and stuff like that. And which I don't do like I used to, but I still do it occasionally for like Six Colors templates or Incomparable templates or things like that, where I'm deep down in something and it's an RSS feed, or it's a page template, or it's a PHP on a server to do membership calculations and stuff like that. Right. And like, all of a sudden, hours have gone by.
You're trying to move that one pixel, and you're like, oh God, I know I can figure out how to line that up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. But anyway, my point is that I do believe that this goes to a tendency. Again, I don't know who's to blame, whether it's all of us or some of us, but it's the to downplay the value of intellectual work. I'm getting a little philosophical and political here, but it's like, you know, there are people who will say, you're not doing real work. Real work is somebody who's digging a ditch, or working in a factory, drilling attaching wheels to cars and screwing on the bolts. Right, that's real work. Right, physical work is real work, and mental work is not real work. And it is true; those are very different kinds of work. And yeah, I do subscribe to the fact that my job beats digging ditches. It totally does. That would really suck if that was my job. I would be unhappy, because I'm bad at it, and it would make me real sweaty and tired until I built up muscles to be better at it. Right. I get that. Like, that's fine. But that doesn't mean that it's not real work. And we do have a tendency culturally to say, this is real work, and this is, you know, you're just sitting on your ass typing at a keyboard. How hard can that be? And it really discounts a lot of the mental work that goes into it. It's a thing. Anyway, what I'm saying is, I'm a little tired, but there's much more to do. There's much more to do. It's And some of it is anticipation. I don't know if you're feeling this too, but it's like part of my feeling about this week is not just, wow, there is so much. How do I cover it? I keep thinking of like little stories to write. I don't want to write like a big giant, like here are all the things that I have been thinking about because they keep occurring to me. In fact, I had one that I wrote down today, but it's also just this thought of like a whole box got opened and all this stuff is coming out of it now. And over the next 3 months, it will be like fodder for us as we go and we learn more about iOS 11 and dig into it and about macOS High Sierra and dig into that and everything else, the watchOS and tvOS. There's going to be more and more of that stuff going on. And like this is a powerful week for agenda setting for us. Like now we kind of know what stuff we're covering. In it's like, I think if you're a news reporter, especially a political reporter, it's a little bit like an election.
Yeah.
Like the result of the election is big news, but it isn't the end of the story. In fact, it kicks off a whole chain of stories. I mean, obviously, there was a UK election yesterday, and I was thinking about it in that context. Like, sure, the snap election, it was a big deal, and they covered the election and what are the polls, and then the results come in over the course of 8 or 10 hours. But, like, that's not the end, right?
The effects are much longer lasting than that one event.
Exactly. It's the beginning of a whole chain of new stories because of the result. Then the fact of the result of the UK election hung parliament. They're going to have to make a deal. You know, what does this mean for Brexit and all that? And that reminded me of WWDC, actually, where it's like, you know, we build up to the keynote, but the keynote's actually like, it is its own huge news story, but it is also the firing of the starting gun for this whole other set of issues that are going to play out. And,
I
keep thinking about that. Like, it's not just what's my stuff to write about now. It's also like starting to process what the shape of the rest of the summer is in terms of
what's the agenda. Like, what is the agenda being laid down? What's the story we're being told? What's the story we're telling other people? What are developers going to do with all this stuff? Right? Like, you're right. It's totally,
and what
totally
are the rules?
Just the beginning.
What are the rules too? Because it's one of those things where I have enough of a relationship with Apple that I get like briefings on hardware, but also like the operating systems. And we're in this weird place where kind of anybody can get iOS, but it's a developer preview and you're not supposed to really write about it, except everybody is. And I'm in that situation where I'm like, I don't want to dig down too deep into it. Especially since if the past years are any indication, the like official Apple's happy for everybody to write about every little thing comes with the public beta, which will be later. So I'm grappling with that a little bit of like not wanting to dive too deep into any issue in iOS until I've got I've spent a little more time with it, and also maybe we're at a point where the public betas are rolling out and more people who aren't developers can actually use it. But I've gone back and forth on that, and I do have one little story that I think I can get away with because it was shown on a slide, basically, about an iOS 11 thing that I'm curious about, which is typing. I'm the keyboard stuff. I'm kind of intrigued how the keyboards have changed, and that flick keyboard on the iPad 9.7, which I had forgotten. I've been using the iPad 12.9 so long that I'd forgotten there's no number row on the 9.7. I was like, oh, look at that flick keyboard, there's no number row. And my reaction should have been, oh, look at that flick keyboard, you can type numbers without having to flip to another screen. Because I had forgotten. I've been using that big iPad for more than a year now.
You've been living in big iPad land.
Yeah, where we just type numbers because there's numbers there and you type them like on a keyboard. Imagine.
Monsters.
I know,
monsters.
It's madness.
Well, I'm looking forward. Yeah, I'm also looking forward to a bunch of these changes. I, you know, as I mentioned on, I think on a couple, at least one of my other podcasts,
I can't
keep track.
It's a big week.
Went out and bought a 10.5 inch, which I kind of in retrospect was like, man, should have gone to the store because it doesn't show up till like next week now. I do have a nice new Apple Pencil, which I'm holding right now, which doesn't work with any device that I own. So it's kind of useless.
I don't think they're in stores until next week.
Oh, I thought they were. I had seen somebody had run out and got one, but maybe you're right. Anyway, but as you say, I am very excited, and I think that will I'm not sure I will install the developer beta, if only because it's slightly more of a rigmarole for me, because I don't have developer access, and therefore I have to get somebody nicely to help me with that. But I am on the public beta threads. Hi, Jason. But I am on the public beta threads, and it sounds like, I mean, since that stuff shows up at the end of the month, it's only a couple weeks probably before it pops up. So I'm, you know, by the time I get this, it'll only be like a week away, and I'll just probably just wait for the public beta.
And if you're an iPad user, I mean, it's like,
much easier.
Let's see how
beta one goes,
how it shakes out. But because I'm not giving too much away, but I did install the developer beta on my 9.7 iPad Pro, and we'll see how it shakes out. Right, it's at times it seems quite usable, but it's a beta, and then at other times it's like, oh no, this is an early OS beta. But it's hard not to if you're an iPad user, just because of all the iPad features. It makes the experience so much more powerful to have those features that I suspect that, you know, iPads will be put on that public beta train immediately all over, and that's probably all for the best. I will say, as a caveat, that within half an hour of installing the developer preview on that iPad Pro, I managed to kill the device to the point where I had to restore from an image. So yeah, it's a beta. Just like, if I told this to somebody and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, I installed it on that knowing that that might happen, and it was okay. Right. It just took an extra half hour to like restore it again. So, and I filed a bug, which you're supposed to do in betas, and hopefully they'll find out that it turns out you shouldn't try to set a 40 megabyte image as your desktop picture, or it should either work, or it should refuse to do it. But what it shouldn't do is crash, which it did.
Break your iPad.
Yeah,
yeah, turns yeah. out. Lots of interesting stuff about to happen in that department. I'm also in the market for a new iMac, so I was excited to see the iMac updates, because I'm using a 2011 non-Retina iMac.
Oh boy,
it's got an optical drive. It's got a blue line that goes up to this part of the display.
You should definitely get a new iMac. Are you thinking of the small one or the big one?
I've been thinking about moving to the big one.
How many Ks do you need, Dan?
I need all the Ks, Jason.
All right.
I'm like a starting ace. I need all the Ks. That was baseball.
It was baseball,
reference.
Yeah.
I thought you might get it.
I got a good job.
I'm thinking about starting going up ace. to the 27.
Okay.
Because lots of people were like, you should get a 27.
I mean, I got the 27. I love it. I'm not sure I really need a screen this big. I have those moments where I think, this is kind of overkill, and do I really use all the space? Because, like, as a writer, I'm not writing. Basically, it allows me to put, like, some windows on the side that are kind of, like, lower priority. But at the same time, then they're all the way over on the side, and it's, like, kind of far away. I occasionally will actually drag a window into the middle so I can see it better, and then drag it off back to the side.
Okay, but let me ask you, when you're doing other stuff that's not writing, like, say, podcast editing, how do you feel about having a 27-inch display?
It's nice. It's nice. The height of it for when I'm in Logic, and of course, when I'm using Final Cut, having the video in the room for that's all great. I mean, no, there's no doubt about it. It seems kind of crazy big, but it does have its uses, and the Retina is beautiful, and the power of it is. I was thinking about it because, you know, this is the first time that my hardware purchases for when I left IDG basically have aged enough that I start to feel that pull. Like, there wasn't a new 12.9 iPad Pro until now, right? I bought that when it came out. And the iMac update the last time was, you know, a year in, and it was just mostly the screen, and it wasn't that big a deal. But now I'm feeling that kind of pull, and I'm fine. I got the high-end processor and graphics card on my iMac, so they're actually still, like, to replace it with something better, I would have to buy the really expensive iMac, which I'm not going to do. But for you, like, you are in prime iMac buying.
Well, and to
time.
The point, as same for, you know, as you mentioned, this iMac was a leftover from IDG as well.
Yeah.
So I never bought this one, which means
so
this is the first.
You got a
really
lot of no money out of it.
Yeah, I really did. I was same with
five years.
Same with my MacBook Air, which came partially, we'll say mostly paid for by by IDG. So I haven't really bought the Mac Mini I own, I think, is the only Mac I've bought in the last probably 5 years that was probably straight up my money. But I have bought a ton of iPads and iPhones since they were my money. So, you know, it does add up. Yeah, I don't know. The 27 versus the 21. I have a 27-inch cinema display, which is... I don't use nearly as much as I should, but it's on another desk. And it's hard to fit. I don't think it fits really on my standing desk with the 21-inch.
Right.
Which also makes me wonder if I put the 27-inch here. I'm going to have to put the 27-inch display over here at some point just to spec it out and see if
that's... You should do that just to imagine what it would be like. I will say your 27-inch display, once you get whatever size a Retina iMac, you should just get rid of that display because it's never going to be good enough for you.
But it's such a nice display.
You think that now, right? You think that now. But once you see a Retina Mac display, it will not seem like such a nice display anymore. I just am telling you, there is a thing
a
you do across, you cross that river, and it's very hard to go back.
Yeah, because I'm living in a non-Retina world Mac-wise.
Yeah, I mean,
I commented this to you the other day because I got home and noticed... things that get released that we miss because there's so much else going on. There's a new version of GarageBand, which I use for all my podcast editing, and I updated it, and they're like, oh, it's got a new modern UI, and I opened it, and I'm like, A, this is hideous, and B, this probably looks way better on a Retina display, because it does not look very good on a non-Retina display.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're really checking it out on non-Retina modes to make sure it looks good.
It's comically cartoonish.
In fact,
on
I wonder, hey, this is a way for Apple to sell new Retina Macs, is to just make
just update
the,
all its software.
Make the non-Retina one look clownish, and then the Retina one just looks super refined. They're like totally different, but nobody knows.
Yeah, because you don't have a comparison unless you got two Macs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I don't think there's going to be a Retina display coming to the MacBook Air anytime soon, despite its meager processor bump this week.
It's called the MacBook or the MacBook Pro without Touch Bar. Those are your options there, but
not there yet.
No.
Not ready.
Mm-mm.
Not ready to give up the MacBook Air.
No, you don't need to do that. But your iMac is probably
the iMac needs to probably. I've noticed that. I think I commented to you while we were sitting around working on some stuff that I had to do, you know, podcast editing, and I was surprised how much better the MacBook Air was at just the speed of like crunching audio files. And I was like, well, it is like, it's an i7 much as the 2011 iMac is, but it's like 3 years newer because it's like a 2014 model, and apparently even that is enough. I mean, they both have SSDs, they both have a decent amount of RAM in them, but I think it just has a better processor.
Do you have an iPad Pro or do you have an Air 2?
I have an Air 2, which will be passed on when the 10.5 shows up.
All right. That's right. So I will say that 10.5 iPad Pro, that is a better audio editor than your iMac. Pop Ferrite on there, way better.
Yeah,
way
I have Ferrite. I've never really spent the time because
way
of the...
better.
But yeah, I may be doing more of that. We'll have to see. But yeah, the iMac, I'm in the market. And it's nice because they've just come out. So I've got a little like, I feel pretty good that there's not going to be any more iMac updates this year.
Yeah, this is a good time to buy. Good time to buy an iMac.
Or a
MacBook Pro or a MacBook.
Yep.
Probably not a MacBook Air.
Probably not a Mac Mini. I mean, it's as good a time as any to buy a Mac Mini, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I was really excited about the... the Mac Mini never gets updated. It takes years for that thing to get updated. I bet they will update it at some point,
and nobody will care
because it'll look... Although, I do have a theory. I'm going to share with you my wacky Mac Mini theory.
You know how I love conspiracy theories.
Here it is. No, because I was talking to Russell from Shifty Jelly, who makes Pocket Casts, and he bought an Intel NUC. These little tiny... They're like Apple TV sized. But it's a full-on Intel computer, and you can get Windows on it if you want. And he bought one of these, planning on running Windows, I think. And then he decided he was going to actually run Mac OS on it, which you can do. You can make it like a Hackintosh, except really, there's nothing you just, it's just software. It's not like you're assembling it from parts and stuff. I always think of Hackintoshes as you got to buy all the parts, but this is just this little hockey puck that's a whole computer. And I was intrigued by that. And then I thought, you know, it would be really interesting if Apple took perhaps even something based on the Intel NUC idea and made that the Mac Mini. Like, here's the new Mac Mini. It looks like an Apple TV, but it's a Mac. Good luck. We can't wait to see what you do with it, right? They could do that. They could also just take the existing hardware and just update to the latest chipset and then walk away for another 2 years. But I really liked that idea of like, what if the next Mac Mini was like even more mini? Like,
I was going to take it a step further. Have you seen the compute card? It's the Intel computer that's like basically the size of like an external hard drive, basically.
Yeah.
Or smaller. They say credit card size. It's hard to tell.
For those older people, it looks to me like a PC card, except it's actually a PC.
Yeah. So I would be fascinated to see a Mac that small. I don't know what you would do with it, but I love the idea.
Well, that's small. I mean, the nice thing about the NUC is that it's big. It's just big enough that it has, you know, some Thunderbolt USB-C.
Right, real ports.
And it really does. It's got HDMI. It's got Thunderbolt 3 USB-C ports. And so it's got some real ports on the back. It's got room for SSD and memory on the inside. It legitimately could be a Mac Mini if Apple wanted to do that. And it wouldn't, again, I'm not putting it past them that they might do something like that. Now, it doesn't seem like it's a particularly high priority, but if they decide that they do want to keep the Mac Mini around, and Apple does have this sort of pride thing of like, well, if we're going to do it, we should do something really cool. Maybe a Mac Mini that is as small as an Apple TV is the way to do it. It's like the world's smallest Mac, but it still would actually be pretty good. Actually, you know, because I was looking at the Intel NUCs, and they're not that far off from being a perfectly good little cheap Mac Mini. So
I was trying to look at the specs on this and see exactly how large it is, because there's no scale in the picture I'm looking at. So it's like, oh, that looks around the size of a Mac Mini, but yeah, it is. I'm guessing closer to a Apple TV size.
Yeah, they're tiny. They're super tiny.
Well, I mean, you see all the people, you know, building. A friend of mine was building a Raspberry Pi or something, and it's like, you know, you can fit a computer in a tiny, tiny thing these days, right? Like,
yeah.
We've gotten really good at that. And you're not limited by space because you don't have to worry about things like spinning disk hard drives and optical drives and that kind of stuff, right? Like, all you need are chips. That's it. And yeah, so you can make something that's pretty tiny and pretty capable.
It's a full computer that fits in the palm of your hand that is a Mac, right?
Right.
That's pretty good.
Sure. Why not?
I don't know. That's my wacky theory. Anyway,
that's good. Solid.
I was really excited when the iMac Pro was announced, because as somebody, even though I've got a four core i7 4 gigahertz processor in my iMac, it's pretty good, right? Pretty good. I still have, when I denoise stuff for podcasts, which I do where there's people with air conditioners and stuff behind them to make them sound better. I occasionally do that on like a Dungeons and Dragons podcast, right? Where I've got a series of 3 or 4 hour long uncompressed audio recordings from people that I have to denoise. And guess what? Even with 4 cores at 4 gigahertz running all of them, hitting all of them, it's totally parallelized. It works really well. It still takes forever to do that, right? And I keep thinking, boy, it would be so much better if I could do this, way faster. But then, you know, then I saw that it starts at $5,000, and I thought, no, it's not.
Well,
it's nice
to have something aspirational, though, right? Like, in the same way that I feel we all used to be like, oh, Mac Pro, like, I don't really need a Mac Pro. But, like, yeah, I can dream about, like, if I had all the money in the world and didn't have to worry about it, I would buy a Mac, totally max out Mac Pro. So it's nice to feel like there's a new high end there.
I would love, to drop $10,000 on an iMac Pro and be able to denoise all of my podcast audio in you know, 20 seconds. That would be super awesome. But, you know, budget wise, yeah, it's not going to happen. But for somebody like our friend Marco, right, who is a developer and podcast guy, so he needs those cores for many things that are the basis of his job, it makes a lot more sense. The one that I'm looking forward to, a little podcast inside baseball, is I really am fascinated to see what John Syracuse is going to do, because it's like, I know it's not this, but knowing John, it's like Apple is now just messing with him. And then let's throw in John's own thing, which is that he's now actually getting pretty close to having used this this Mac Pro of his for a decade.
Right.
And he talked about on the ATP live show, like, He kind of wants to try to shoot the moon now, right? Where he's like, oh, but if I could get to a decade, wouldn't that be great? I could say I used a one Mac for 10 years. It's amazing. But the iMac Pro, like, he said in the past, like, well, I could get a high-end iMac to replace it. That's fine. So now here's this iMac Pro.
But in the offing is still this promised mythical Mac Pro.
Exactly. So Apple has now, like, if the news was the iMac Pro is here and the Mac Pro is going away, John would be like, all right, I'll get it. This, whatever, it's fine. But now that the Mac Pro is out there, he's totally not going to get it, because he wants to be able, and whether the new Mac Pro will let you do this or not remains to be seen, but he wants to be able to swap in a new video card and have it be configurable. And he wants that Mac Pro that we don't know what it's going to be. I had a nice conversation with Mike on Upgrade this week about thinking of the Mac Pro from the perspective of knowing what the iMac Pro is and saying, okay, if that product exists, how do you make the Mac Pro different from it?
Right. Because, like, where is the ceiling?
They should be different. Like, the Mac Pro shouldn't just be an iMac Pro without a screen. There are lots of other things that the iMac Pro won't directly address that people could have maybe gotten away with that the Mac Pro should address. So it's
right, like the big one being upgradability, because of course the 27 inch iMac, the only thing you can change once you've got it is the RAM.
Right. Upgradability, rackability. I heard from a bunch of people who are like, you know, these things get a thing with a big screen is not something you want if what you're doing is mounting them somewhere.
Sure,
which
right.
people, I mean, some people do
people
still
do
that.
With minis too, right? Like, you know, servers right. too.
But there's lots of, yeah, but it is that expandability, upgradability, reaching higher up, maybe being more configurable. So you could even make it reach a little bit lower down than the iMac Pro. If you wanted to downscale it, it might start at a lower price than the iMac Pro, but you would get less, but you would be able to do that if you wanted to do that. I don't know, but it's, I feel like pretty good now that at this point that what John's going to do is just keep waiting.
Oh, he's going to wait to see. He's not going to buy an iMac Pro without at least having seen what the Mac Pro is going to be.
Absolutely.
I guarantee that.
And I think he's going to try to shoot the moon. I think unless the Mac Pro, I don't know when it'll be exactly a decade, but if it's sometime this year, then he'll totally do that, because, I mean, the iMac Pro is not going to ship in volume probably until 2018, right? Because it's shipping in December. So even if they start to ship it sometime in December, it's really a 2018 product. And the Mac Pro will be coming presumably sometime in 2018. So John will just keep waiting, because there's this other tantalizing product that we don't know anything about that's floating out there. So
it's been using one since, what, like 2008? Yeah. I'm looking at the list, trying to figure out when he would have bought it.
2008, maybe. I don't know. It's 2007 or 2008. Okay. There were a lot of people out there who were confused and thought the iMac Pro was the Mac Pro.
Right.
And they're getting their time sequence wrong. The iMac Pro was designed to replace the Mac Pro,
right,
and then Apple declared that they would actually update the Mac Pro instead, or in addition, make a new Mac Pro. So the iMac Pro was conceived of as a replacement for the Mac Pro, yes, but since then Apple decided they would make a real Mac Pro, and so we get both, which is interesting.
Yeah. Apple. I'm fascinated too by the adjustable market, because the iMac Pro is already so. I mean, you keep winnowing, right? Like, the Mac is not a huge market. You know, they sell 4 million or so a quarter. That's not bad at all compared to the PC market, but it's certainly not the size of the iPhone market. And then desktops are but a fraction of that. Pro desktops are but a smaller fraction of that. And now you're going to have two Pro offerings. And so it's very fascinating to me because we're looking at, you know, maybe Apple addressing something like 1% of the market for PCs with these like ultra high things. And maybe they want to see if they can grow and take some more market share from Windows, because certainly PCs have not been doing well in the past decade, and they constantly are losing, you know, sales are declining, etc. And so maybe Apple feels like there's an opportunity there if we bolster our Pro offerings to sort of draw people back over. And that's why I think you saw them talking about things like VR development on stage, right? It's, you know, a lot of that stuff has basically been done on Windows because there really hasn't been a Mac alternative. You couldn't do it. And so trying to draw in more of that, I guess maybe they feel like there's a chance to grow the market there, which is why they're expanding and offering so much on the high end. But it is interesting because it's not traditionally where their bread and butter has been.
Yeah, I don't know. It's shifting sands here, which is kind of interesting, where they're going and what the market is and how many of these they expect to sell. I don't know. How many people are like John Siracusa and are going to look at that iMac Pro and go, I want to wait?
No one is like John Siracusa.
Everybody is like, no, that's
spell
true.
That out.
Yeah, well, so they'll sell one or two, you know.
At least a couple.
Oh, we got a special Six Color Secret podcast moment here, Dan.
Yeah.
My cat is
here. Is there a cat?
Here.
I can hear a cat.
Yeah, because I leave the doors open when there's when we're doing the secret podcast.
It's like these guys across the street who have been unloading landscaping stuff, and I keep worrying that something loud is about to turn on. And there's like a bulldozer, like a little mini bulldozer sitting on the back of a truck over there. And I'm like, oh man, as soon as that goes, I'm going to have to start muting my mic. But they haven't done it yet. So I'm waiting.
It's not going to matter. All right,
it's the secret podcast.
Well, I hope people enjoyed that faint cat sound in the background. Because there's a cat.
The faint cat sounds.
Yes. Well, my microphone is built to not pick up background sounds, right? But
Faint Cat Sounds is my favorite Beach Boys album.
But I do close the door and evict the cat from the office when I'm recording most podcasts, but not the secret podcast. You get the unfiltered. You subscribers to Six Colors get the unfiltered secrets of my office. It's exciting. All right, well, another week in the books, Dan. Not much happened. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, there's certainly nothing left for us to talk about, right?
Nope, I think we're done. Thanks to everybody out there for listening and subscribing. We appreciate it. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.